Today is Monday, March 15th, 2010, and I just want to begin this year. Hello to everyone in front of me, and I thank you for coming. It's the tail end of the semester, basically, and you know what happens at the tail end, particularly if Rabbi Miller isn't here. But I want to make one funny comment. In my talk on the terrible tsunami that hit the Tzioni Dati world, so I mentioned that Gedolei Yisrael pay a heavy price at times. And I alluded to children and grandchildren who have done terrible things. So an email came in with someone identifying the names of who I was alluding to. So I have to tell the person, you're absolutely correct. I just don't want to mention the names because, I don't know, if you don't know, you live longer. If you do know, it hurts to think that these Gedolim had such children and grandchildren.
See, the other one, have the other one.
Right.
For example, this fellow, Meir Soloveitchik.
Right.
Who was a grandson
of Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, a son of Reb Eliyahu. Exactly. So Baruch Hashem, when you're raised in a great home, at times it works to your advantage, at times to your disadvantage, but I want to tell that person that he was absolutely right in the names he emailed in. Now, as I said last week, we have to do what we can to avoid divorce. There's no question that Chazal took a negative attitude towards divorce. The Medrash that I showed you, the Pesikta, is with Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. There's no question the Mizbeach Morid Alev the Ma'at. Nevertheless, at times you feel that nothing can be helped, they have to divorce. If the couple is reasonably normal, in other words, and they've gone for counseling, so I did mention that what I have found, and I can't say it's a cure-all, but at times, when you mention the children, and you show them how the children will suffer, mature people may be able to make an adjustment. And that's the quote we ended off last week from Ari Goldman, The Search for God at Harvard. That quote is very powerful. And I myself have used it a few times, I would say quite successfully. I gave it last week. I don't want to waste time re-quoting it in its entirety. But by the way, I'll start the next year after Pesach with the Rambam. I'll give you sources on the Rambam of going back to Egypt, and I'll give you the exact date that Shiva was written. I did the research last night. Okay, anyway, the heart of Ari Goldman's quote, and what's interesting about Ari Goldman, he's both a nephew to Rabbi Norman Lamb and a nephew to Rabbi Israel Miller, a first cousin to Rabbi David Miller. He comes from good stock. His wife was my student in Machon Gold, Tochnut Yud Gimel. And he's not exactly Haredi, to put it mildly, or Chadali, but he is basically Shomer Shabbos, etc. Now, and the gist of his quote was that parents, when you bring a child into the world, you have an obligation. Kids are not asked to be born. And parents don't get along, but for the sake of the children, they can learn to stop fighting, to stop yelling it out at each other, to stop being angry at each other. And children deserve a mother and father. And he writes about his own suffering and how it affected his life when his parents, whom he loved, his mother, his father, split up and went elsewhere. I want to begin the class today with Shmuel Boteach. Now, I know when I say Shmuel Boteach, everyone laughs. I see Donnie is already laughing. I want to say I've met the man. I met his wife's family in Australia. He's a very interesting individual, and he's a very bright individual. He's published many books. The man knows a great deal.
He's an Oxford.
He was in Oxford for many years in charge of students' relationship there. He was a Chabadnik, a full Chabadnik at the time. Over the years, Chabad claims they've kicked him out. All right, he has gotten involved with sex, like a Ruth Westheimer, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly. You know that the two most important people, experts on sex, are two Jews who were raised. Westheimer came from a very frum background, and she's not a Shomeret Mitzvah today, but she certainly is what's called a non-practicing Orthodox Jew, if I can use that term. Shmuel Boteach, on the other hand, became a Baal Tshuva in his youth, became very frum, and a Chabadnik, and he's a practicing Orthodox Jew, although some people...
Can you explain what that means?
Not for now. It's like a lapsed Catholic. You follow me? There is that expression in Catholicism, a lapsed Catholic. It's someone who really believes, but never can observe it all. These Jews, the shul they don't daven in is an Orthodox shul because they were raised that way and they know what it's about. Anyway, Voltaire certainly is Orthodox in practice and in theology. Now, what people criticize him for is he's taken sex and he's turned it into a popular topic. I have to give him credit that he's been able to make a living off of sex. And I have to tell you, I've read some of his books. I actually read The Kosher Sex from cover to cover. People want me to comment on it. I have to admit, certain parts are a little bit vulgar. I don't want to quote it in Barabbas, but the ideas happen to be very good. But anyway, quoting from Kosher Sex, beginning on page 167, you have another tremendous source to show people how children suffer. Being a product of a broken home, it still bothers me till this very day that there are children of similar homes who will actually speak about their parents' divorce as if it were a good thing. They say, quote, "Thank heavens my parents finally got divorced. They were just killing each other. They're both better off this way," end quote. Surely they are mistaken. Our parents would have been better off being happily married. My whole life was affected by my parents' divorce. It heightened my insecurities and left me feeling that nothing in life really works. To me, the world was made of a bunch of broken pieces, incongruent parts that came together for a time, but ultimately never fit. How else is a child to feel when the archetypal relationship which brought him or her into the world dissolves amidst great acrimony? If so, where would I eventually fit in? I look forward neither to happiness nor to peace. When a doctor recently asked me in a synagogue if I thought that his recent divorce from his wife of 16 years would have effect on their son, I said, quote, "It's like asking whether discovering that the sun won't shine tomorrow or that the body has no immune system will have any effect in one's outlook on life." And he goes on and on this theme, and you can see the deepness of the shock, the trauma of his parents' divorce. To summarize the next paragraph, he says something that's very, very deep and true. A child needs security. You know, we're adults, we grow up. I don't have to tell you, at our age, we already know that life can change in a moment, in a flash. We don't have security. No, Yitzchak, who am I paraphrasing? Exactly, Moreno Verabeno. What was the Rav's famous question? How are we allowed to pray? It's a question that he. I heard him talk about it, if not a thousand times, 999. And it's not just the tape. He writes about it. He spoke about it. And he always raised the question: how can little man? Who the hell are we? Imagine, I had to give a shiur yesterday on the difference between, in my opinion, a nevala and a toeva. Okay? So how can little man approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the Rav says you need a matir. And what's the matir for tefillah? Eitzara. That a Jew is tamid mima makim kraticha Hashem. And I remember the Rav once went on in a Yitzhuvah Rasha. And he said something, he said, you know, I can lift my hand now. I can look at my fingers. Do I know if I can do this in 5 minutes? And I have to tell you, I got news yesterday of someone I knew and over the years interacted with. She died, that didn't even make it to 70. My wife told me the news last night. She didn't want to tell me before she. So this is a human being. And by the way, it's a healthy feeling. If we don't have this feeling, we're not humans and we can't function properly and we can't be good people. This is part of being a good person. This was my critique yesterday. You sit in front of a computer, no one's in the room, you think you're God. You can say whatever you can say, you can insult whoever you want and can insult. You can put down whoever you want to put down. You can speak about your theories as if you are a Moshe Maimed HaSinai, and there's no one in the room with you. But a good, healthy human being knows humility, humbleness, etc. Now, that's a very important paragraph, because a child should not feel like this. A child, notice when you hold the baby, you're a father, you're a grandfather, you're a great-grandfather. In my case, I held my great-grandson Saturday night. You hold the baby, that baby looks at you. His whole trust is in you. His confidence is in you. Later, the kid starts growing up. It's a mommy, it's a daddy. How happy that kid is to see his parents. His world is whole. His world is complete. His mommy and daddy can do anything. And this is the way it should be. This is the happy childhood we speak about. I don't have to tell you what Freud taught us. And when that and a good deal of Freud is correct. I'm not here. Again, you come back to the Jewish connection. Freud's wife was the granddaughter of Chatmi Gedolei Yisrael, Chacham Bnei's. She's a granddaughter of Chacham, of Reb Shimshon Ful Hirsch's Rebbe, of Reb Yaakov Bettlinger's Rebbe, Reb Yitzchak Bnei's. And Freud would not let her light Shabbos candles. That's what comes out now out of memoir literature. Freud's wife, I'm talking about. Yeah.
If two people are able to live together in peace and tranquility and have a stable home to care for the children with love.
Right.
But suppose that doesn't happen. Suppose there's anger and screaming.
So that's what we discussed last week, and
you see
both from Boteach and from Goldman, who experienced it, they both are saying black and white in their books that if our parents had stayed together, we would have had happier childhoods. That's what they're saying. He's making a plea gentlemen, statistically, he's not ridiculous. The question is, can you work it out? Okay, you have to. Statistically, it's not ridiculous, and I can tell you cases, but I don't argue. Just listen to me. Listen to me. Life experience. I know cases where my daughter was able to keep a couples together. And they worked it out. If you're mature, if you have seichel, you work it out. You once loved each other, you can find love again. Ultimately, we'll come to that in a minute. Okay, now, he raises, this is the gist of his paragraph, and he feels very strongly his parents should have made the effort, or to paraphrase Goldman, as two mature individuals. Remember Goldman's words, they should have made the effort. A kid's world is shattered. Now, there's another negative cycle to divorce that he raises here, which statistically is true as well. I don't know if it's as bad as the statistics he quotes, but I read all over it's true, and my daughter tells me it's true, and I see from my life experience it's true. You see, the minute you have divorce, it becomes like a tradition in the family. It becomes self-starting the next generation. Kids don't see a happy home, and kids don't see the effort being made. So you wind up that the next generation, children of divorced parents, have a higher rate of divorce than children who came from happy, stable homes. And this is self-perpetuating. I'll comment myself. Give me 2 minutes. Just let me make the point, and then I'll comment. And then if I haven't said it, I'll open the floor. And this self-perpetuates. Now, kids don't see compromise. Kids don't see parents making an effort to reach out. People are different. I always tell my students when they're going out and they tell me the girl she's just like me, I say that's not necessarily good. It's important to marry someone who's a little different so that you can compromise, supplement each other, complement each other, and give your children a much more full picture. At times, and I've seen this in life, children of divorced homes will tell you, because my parents got divorced, we will make every effort to have a happy marriage. I will not let it happen to me. And I have to tell you that there was a great personality in Yeshiva University who got divorced. It was shocking. 1960s. He got divorced. He remarried. His daughter got divorced. Daughter remarried. Got divorced again. Sad story. I met the third generation. Third generation. Father, daughter, daughter. And this daughter married to all Yeshiva University people, as a matter of fact, her son-in-law studied in this very kollel. In other words, a great-grandson of the original person. And these people have studied with me over the years via their older people, but via the magic of the modern world, have studied with me and considered me a Rebbe in their life. And one time I felt friendly enough to ask them a simple question. How did you work out such a beautiful marriage? Your parents divorced. Your grandparents divorced. Your brother divorced. On all sides. Where were your examples? And she said to me, Rebbe, you're absolutely right. I was determined I wouldn't let it happen to me. So it's interesting. There's a negative cycle here. He talks about it. Shmuley Botreach, he gives you statistics that more than 50% of the children of divorced homes themselves become divorced. I can tell you that at times I've spoken to students of mine, and you know we have a real problem today with the ability to conquer the world, and marriage becomes a low priority. I'll perhaps talk about it later today. But I've spoken with students, why don't you marry? There was a young man who studied in the Kollel. He was never officially in the Kollel, but Libo Chashka B'Torah, whenever he came to Israel, studied me in BMT. His family is in business. He went into the family business. But whenever he can, he comes to hear my Shayurim in Israel, and he's a real Ben Torah. So he was already late 20s. And I said to him, well, why don't you find a girl? What's lacking? Well, I mean, you, this guy can do whatever he wants. It's not a poor family. You can do what you want. Well, what's holding you back? And he said, Rebbe, this classmate of mine got married. He's divorced. This class of mine, his Milas, got married. He's divorced. This guy I know from the Upper West Side, divorced. This one I know from where he grew up in Broyer's community, divorced. No, I can't blame the guy. He says, why do I have to get married? I also have to become a divorce number, a divorce the census. I also have to get involved. And I understood what he was saying. And this is the problem that Shmuley Botreach stresses and writes about so beautifully. So it's another source. If you feel there's a chance, people are mature, they can mend. They can work it out. You know what you have. You don't know what you're going to get. There's much that can be said here. It's another source to show them. It hits home because it's Shmuley Botreach talking, not Aaron Rakefet. Michael, did I cover?
The only comment I wanted to make is that there are people who won't get married because they saw their parents living a miserable life.
Right,
and
right.
Not getting divorced.
That say that it could be.
You know, they
could
saw
be.
Their parents so unhappy, it came out on the kid.
Could
so
be. Could be.
The children refused to get married.
Could be, could be, could be. Now, it could be. This is all part of the problem. And but according to Botreach and according to Goldman, better their parents should have made the attempt than the divorce. I'll show you another source, too, that you might be able to use if it's a borderline case where you can help. Yes?
If they stay together and there's always like screaming and broken glass, that could affect the kid just as much as
agreed, 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 agreed. We're talking about this a lot. Chatilan is a b'dieved, there's no question. But we're talking here where you can talk. In other words, what Goldin and Botreach are pleading for is that their parents should have had common sense. You brought kids into the world, you have an obligation. You once loved each other, you stood under the chuppah, you can work it out that you don't have to get divorced until all the kids drop dead, like I said last week, the joke I told you. Remember, there a guy comes to the rabbi, he's 95, we're getting, so the rabbi says, what do you want to get a divorce? You're 95, your wife is 93, yeah, we waited for the kids to die. So, all right, there's something to that. Now, I want to show you another source, very interesting, where these sources come up. Do you fellas recognize what this is? The Jewish homemaker. Anyone know what the Jewish homemaker is?
Does it still
exist? Yeah, sure. The OK. This is a in-house publication. It's published by the OK Kashrut, just like the OU has their magazine, which is Jewish Action, and part of Jewish Action is devoted to Kashrut. Just like Rabbi Heinemann, the Star K has their publication devoted to Kashrut. So the OK, which is the Levy family, Chabad family, they have the Jewish homemaker. And in addition to Kashrut, occasionally they have very fascinating articles. And in the April 2001 issue, beginning on page 24, they have an article, Growing Up Divorced. And this is an article by Jennifer Paquette. I don't know who the lady is, but she bemoans the fact that she got divorced. And that her husband, and they were young, they were impetuous, they were headstrong, and she describes the impact it has on her children. And one time she's talking with her son on what do you want to be when you grow up, and the kid says he wants to be a helicopter firefighter, and she starts to talk about where will you live to be a helicopter fighter, and it turns out that the kid speaks in terms that he'll live in one city, his wife will live in another city. And the point she makes in this article is a very fascinating article, and afterwards there's rabbinic commentary on it, that ultimately this kid growing up in a divorced home, he believes that mommy and daddy never live under the same roof. And that's exactly what I told you last week with the essays I would get in the Midrashic Moriah and elsewhere, where girls from divorced homes would paraphrase the Gemara, I never knew where I would be for Shabbat. Thursday night I would ask my mother or my father, Shabbat Shomi, which home do I go to? And that girl wrote in a paper, it wasn't until I was 16, 17, that I realized that most children don't have that type of question. They're at home with their mother and with their father every Shabbat. And this again, it just strengthens what Shmuley Bateich was saying, that if you grow up in an environment where divorce is the norm, so you perpetuate it. It becomes the norm. And you never saw parents get along, be amicable, compromise, that crucial word. And of course, when you go into a marriage or don't want to marry, as Michael said, the Jewish people are the losers. And these are sources. Again, I'm not foolish enough to think you can influence everyone. People are hard-headed, people are self-centered, and there are million and one other problems in life. I'll quote to you from another article, and this touches upon already American problems of the good life, split personalities. This appeared in Jerusalem Post, July 9th, 1993. It's by Nettie Gross. Nettie Gross missed being my student by the toss of a coin. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? In the early 70s, so many kids came to Israel to study after the Yom Kippur War, that the schools that existed at that time could not hold them all. So Machon Gold was triple booked. So they opened up two branches, one in Netanya and one in Bayat Vagan. And they flipped coins who would go to the real Machon Gold, which was in Shiftei Yisrael, Rechov HaTurim, where I taught, or the Bayat Vagan branch, or Netanya. And Nettie Gross wound up in Netanya, while many of her bosom buddies wound up being my students. What's frightening about this article, which appeared in Jerusalem Post, is that she harangues against divorce and how American society, the Orthodox society, has to have it all. and how it leads to divorce. And I'm sorry to tell you that today Nettie Gross is remarried after a long, difficult divorce proceeding that I don't want to go into, because the husband or ex-husband is a Talmud of mine, and I know that he went through hell, because in his case he was an agun. There was no aguna, it was just the opposite. But you see, she makes the point, and this already comes to Nivul and Nivala, how we live in two worlds. And ultimately, the non-Jewish world can have tremendous impact on us. And she describes, while the Jewish mom was home working hard, carpooling the kids, taking them to day school, helping them get their costumes ready for Purim, doing this for Pesach and this for Hanukkah, the man is at work, and he's part of that big world. He is already a success. And she has one line here. He knows how to read, institutional investor, and he can open a Baba Metzia in the same breath. But that same individual seems to forget that there's a halachic prohibition against having an affair with your beautiful Gentile secretary. And she goes on and on to describe the impact of two worlds. And of course, ultimately, when divorce comes, how it destroys families and destroys children, and the machloket over the money problems. And after 25 years of marriage, he soon discovers that in his 25 years absence from the Jewish single scene, his pool of available women has grown. Not such a bad deal. And the Jewish mother walks away, never with children, with responsibilities, with money difficulties, with having to go to work for the first time, and all that goes with being on her own. Could be that the modern Orthodox Jewish man's recollection of whether sleeping with an Italian receptionist is prohibited by the written or the oral law eventually becomes hazy, perhaps. So this too, an interesting document, an interesting comment on life. And unfortunately, if you know the circles in which Nettie grew up, and Nettie lives, and Nettie functions, and Nettie came in Aliyah, you find divorce all over. We live in two worlds. We have double standards of values. None of us are immune from the toshab aspect of our lives. The challenge is to keep the ger aspect prominent, and the toshav aspect, as far as influencing our morals, our goals, our desires, our dreams, our standards, our values, to keep that aspect much more minimal. And this is the challenge, and this is the scene, and this is the reality. Now, one more source that is brand new, basically, and a powerful source, which I don't think we can use. This source in Europe could be used beautifully in a firm environment, perhaps can be used with the difficulties we have, I'm not certain, but it's worth repeating. A volume came out about a year ago, or less than a year ago, it's been a bestseller, an Art Scroll volume, A Tale of Two Worlds by Devorah Glicksman. Very fascinating volume. It deals with the Bender family, and of course it's not stressed in this volume, it is played down, but YU owes its survival to Rabbi Avraham Bender, the grandfather or the father of the protagonist of the volume. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Rabbi Bender was the most successful mishulach for the yeshiva during the dark, terrible years of the late 20s, throughout the 30s, into the 40s. Why, you at one time had mishulachim. Do you know who else was a mishulach for the yeshiva? The grandfather of Benny Begin's children. He's married to the daughter trying to think of the name, it'll come back to me. He's married to the daughter of the last active Meshulach. It's the granddaughter. He's married to the granddaughter of the last active Meshulach for Yeshiva University. And Rabbi Bender was the legendary Meshulach who traveled all over the United States with a long beard and black clothes and raised a fortune of money that enabled the yeshiva to survive the Depression. And this is a story about his son, about his family, a tale of two worlds. It deals with Europe, it deals with America. Anyway, it's a fascinating volume. I cannot say all the historic facts are correct. I wrote a letter to Art School and made corrections. I heard from them like the Chinaman on the moon is eating glatt kosher steak tonight. Now, on page 549, she tells the following story. A couple came to Rav Meir Simcha requesting a divorce. Rav Meir Simcha listened to their arguments. As they aired their negative points of view, their anger and resentment rose to a fever pitch. Their differences seemed truly irreconcilable. Nu, Rav Meir Simcha agreed with a heavy heart, let us make a date for giving the divorce. As they discussed the date, Rav Meir Simcha remembered something. You have a child, yes? They answered affirmatively. I want you to both come here with the child on the day we are scheduled for Siket. The day came, the couple arrived with their child, and this is a Gadol b'Yisrael, Rav Meir Simcha, HaKohen. Rav Meir Simcha put the child on his lap and began to croon and hug him. Oy, mein teire Yingel, was wird sein mit dach? My dear child, what will be with you? You will be a living yasim, orphan. The child began to cry. The mother began to cry. The father began to cry. I don't want my parents to have a get, the child whimpered. I also do not want a get, his mother sobbed. Neither do I, the father echoed softly. New Rebbe Yisrael declared, there will not be a get. Come, let us make a l'chaim. They drank a l'chaim and Rebbe Yisrael began to dance with the family. Well, that's a beautiful story that summarizes Goldman and Boteach and the lady Paquette, if I'm pronouncing her name right. But nevertheless, halavai, that can work. Halavai, we can have influence.
This is absolutely...
At the, you don't think it's powerful, okay? Yitzchak Rubin, who lacks a little emotion, does not believe that Rav Meir Simcha could pull it off. Rav Meir Simcha could pull it off because he was the Dvinska Rav, the Arsa Meach, the Meshech Chachma, Gadol mi Rabban Shemo. Now, I'll cite to you from an Aguda convention of divorce and how it has to be handled. And here we come, of course, to the major part of what I want to say today. We all agree. Unfortunately, sometimes nothing can be done to save a marriage. And as you said, as the memoir literature indicates, dishes are thrown around, doors are slammed, people are so-called suffering. All right, you have to give a get. If you have to give a get, the get should be given in dignity. A get is not a license to disregard all aspects of Torah behavior. And here you have a beautiful talk that a great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Avram Palm of Torah Vadas, gave at the Aguda Convention in 1995. His talk was later written up, and the Jewish family in its glory and in crisis, and the talk appears in the late Jewish Observer, the May 1996 issue. I'm quoting page 8. And The following story says it all. First of all, you see from the fact that Reb Avram Palm had to talk about the divorce situation. You already see by the 1990s, divorce was all over the place, and you don't have to differentiate between the modern Orthodox world, between the Haredi world, between the black hat world. Divorce is in all our circles. Statistics jump up from 2%, 5%. You're now hitting 25% minimum in the Torah world. And once it begins, it's like a conflagration. If they're doing it down the block, we're doing it on our block, and there's no shame anymore, nothing is swept under the carpet. It's out in the open. Everyone is out of the closet, divorce on top of divorce, and Reb Avram Palm is speaking at the Aguda Convention. And he says, I'm paraphrasing him, you'll see it in the article, he says, at times, rabbis realize that divorce is the only solution. But a human being was raised on Torah. We're supposed to live in dignity. You have to divorce in dignity. You can't turn it into a fight. You can't turn it into a World War III. Just as you got married in dignity, you have to work out an amicable solution, an amicable compromise, and get divorced in dignity. And he tells a beautiful story. That this balabas in Europe, now I don't know if the story really happened or it's apocryphal, but this story you can tell and it will have an impact. That balabas in Europe, a chashim of balabas comes to the Ravi and he says, Rebbe, I have to ketav sechot, get in the fray, I have to get divorced, the marriage can't be saved, we have problems, it's no good. The rabbi tries to talk him out of it, he can't. So the rabbi finally says to him, tell me, what are the problems with your wife? I know your wife. She's filled with Yirat Shemayim. What are your problems? And the balabas says, Rabbi, she's my wife now. It's not nice for me to talk against her. We're still married. I don't want to be blacking her name. All right, they set a date for the divorce. The Beis Din comes. There's a million Jews are watching. There were minhagim in Europe that when you gave a divorce, you did it with publicity, etc. And we get up the get, sees up the get, they rip the get up. You know, right after the get is received by the woman, we have a tcherim going back to the Balei Tosfot. We rip the get so that no one can ever puzzle the get again. The get is puzzled. You cannot be motzi laz on the get. They even found the remis to it, v'natan la sefer kritut, kritut to rip. So after the get is ripped, the rabbi says to the man, listen, now you can tell me, what were the problems with this woman who was your wife? I know her, but I can't understand. He says, Rebbe, before I couldn't tell you she was my wife. Now she's a poor woman, she has no husband, no one can protect her. She's an upgegetta fraya, grusha, the analmana. How can I talk against the woman in that position? And Rav Palm made the point, you have to divorce in dignity. And this takes us to...
This is good for the Gudas Yisrael audience. This is not
for us. Say that we'll get there. Well, please, Rav Avram Palm, you don't know who the man was. He was.
He was a Ziskite.
You should have known Reb Avram Palm. This is a reflection.
Sometimes you have to tell. Let's say the woman is a really evil lady.
That's the Chafetz Chaim. Someone that's going to marry her. That's the Chafetz Chaim. When you're allowed to tell with a shidduch shmir kolashim, that's halacha lemaisa. That's a different shaila. But he's giving us a lesson that he's telling these ungood people, don't fight over a divorce. You divorce in dignity, you don't turn it into World War III.
People don't like each other.
Even if you don't like each other, you have to have a little dignity and do things properly, right, that you don't create endless scandal and endless machlokes and endless heartache. Now, taking it one step further and coming into the problem that haunts us and probably is the greatest halachic problem that we face today, is that men have discovered a weapon, a very simple weapon. And I have a very sad feeling that Nettie Gross alludes to it. It's very simple. Everyone, every man knows that Me'ika Hadin, he can have more than one wife. Everyone knows that if he doesn't, even if Kalim the Rabbeinu Geshem, but it could very well be he can have a Pilegesh. Everyone knows the famous tshuva of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, of the Chacham Tzvi, of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, I was calling the Chacham Tzvi as his father, but everyone knows the famous tshuva of Yaakov Emden permitting a Pilegesh. As a matter of fact, that tshuva photographed from an original edition, I think, is the only time a tshuva has appeared in color, a photograph of the pages of Rabbi Yaakov Emden permitting a Pilegesh.
Yes.
But one
second. Just to the end, from you. And yeah. I tell you, Yossi Aglili ate chicken with cheese or with milk.
Right.
And you say to me, Reuben, that was a das yochid. The consensus is not to accept.
Correct,
it.
Correct.
Throw it out. Now, correct. If I come along and I hear sources that you're telling me about a Pilegesh, then there's a guy called the Rambam, Baruch Hashem.
There was a man, what is
this? This is normal Meshus HaTorah.
The same?
I tell you why I have a Pilegesh. What kind of person would you think of?
Another Bishita Torah.
Yeah.
But there's
what are we advertising?
What are we advertising? If the New York Times had an article, I will continue. Yitzchak's question does not has little to do with the thesis I want to develop. So every Talmud Chacham in the world knows that there's a machlokes rishonim about Pilegesh and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and you all know what went on in America and in Flatbush and the phone numbers to call, and the guy in Lakewood that actually had a Pilegesh, someone living in Lakewood, they tell a story. I saw pictures of his two apartments. One apartment, he lives with his wife, and a few blocks away he had another apartment with a Pilegesh and had children with both wives, and both were happy. So the man, you understand, he can get away with murder. The woman is an eshet ish. She cannot marry unless she has a get. Please, this is a divine system. If the Rev heard you speak like that, he'd pick you up and kick you out like a football. So behave yourself. This is a divine system. You're a reformed Jew. What you don't like, you want to change. You can't live with it. They find it hard not to drive on Shabbos, so they throw it out. This is a divine system. A man takes a wife, a man divorces a wife. Okay. Whether our Western minds understand it or not is the whole problem of the influence of Western culture upon us. Who tells you Western culture is correct? Maybe this is an infinitely more beautiful system in theory. Anyway, so man has discovered the woman needs a get. He can hold the woman up, but you all know she has to pay for the get. And this became a terrible problem. It already began in the 70s into the 80s. What I call a man-made aguna or a self-inflicted aguna. And there's no question that 98% of the time it's the woman who suffers. Occasionally you have a woman who feels she wants to torture her ex-husband and she won't take a get, so he can't remarry, let him live with a Pilegesh, let him disgrace himself, as Yitzchak alluded to a few minutes ago. It's a disgrace, it's a maneuver, she won't take a get. That is a rare case, although it happens. And my daughter was involved in Israel. You ask me later, I'll come to it later. We actually had cases like that in Israel. My daughter testified in the Knesset, and the law in Israel is such today that it applies both to man and woman. They can't play games. Now, when this problem intensified and the rabbis seemed impotent to solve the problem, so people were calling for reform. Rabbi Emanuel Rachman is the most famous name, although he's not the only one. There was a Rabbi Morgenstern involved. These people came up with a solution, the whole concept of retroactive annulment of marriage. And let me explain what Rabbi Rachman or Rabbi Morgenstern or what they're based in, was basing their thinking upon. Because I have to tell you in advance that while I don't know Rabbi Morgenstern personally, but I certainly knew Rabbi Emanuel Rachman very well, and he was an extremely edler mensch, 100%. His theories on orthodoxy and Jewish law always were left of center, which is true. He had many kulat and yontif, which he felt you could answer a telephone, you could, lights were not a problem. He felt that.
What, did he publish this?
Yeah.
There
were many accepted it. Many, you know, one may be in one man's Judaism.
Putting on a light, I remember as a child that we did.
Yeah, I'm saying. One, two.
No.
Say that Rabbi Rachman, I can tell you, felt that the telephone was not different than the light. There were others who agreed with him. He always was a little left of center in Pesach Halacha. He allowed a microphone? I don't know.
That I wrote a letter when I was a chaplain to Rabbi Belkin.
Use the microphone that a Gentile turned on. So there was some on Rabbi and Rabbi Simcha Levi. That's where that comes from. But you're talking, you're in the army. They might not have been mata in the civilian rabbinate, but they were mata in the military rabbinate. Kenzine. Now, what was Rabbi Rachman's proposal based upon? Okay, two sources. Number one, there are places in the Gemara where we talk about Hafkat Kedushin. I'll give you, I don't want to go into time now and take every case, but I'll take one example, the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Lamed Gimel, which is the easy example to take because all of you know that Gemara, Lamed Bet, Lamed Gimel, there's a whole sugya there. And what do you see there? That the man was Mevatel the Get Shelo B'fnei HaBeistin, B'fnei Echad, a Shliach, and Chazal said, we're going to teach this guy a lesson. Hu asa shelo kahogin. So we're going to do equally, play a dirty trick on him. And they retroactively annulled the marriage so that the woman did not need a get. How could they annul the marriage? Called the Makadesh, al dat chachamim Makadesh. So they declared the biot biot snut, if he married her through biot. And if he married her through Kesev, and most Rishonim learned the same thing with Shtar, they declared the Kesev and the Shtar Hefka, Hefka Beitin Hefka, so that he wound up giving the woman nothing. So Rabbi Rachman said, if we can retroactively annul marriage in that case, and there's another case of retroactive annulment of marriage, there are other cases where it seems Bishat Maisa, but there's a case in Ktuvit where it's retroactively. It's al tanai, you know, I'm talking about the sugi where that can raise a get if I don't come within 30 days. So where Choshish, at the end of 30 days, maybe he did come, but the bridge broke down, force majeure. So really, she can't remarry. He did come, but he couldn't get across the bridge. It's like New York, Lo Aleinu, what's going on in New York this weekend, too. Two Jews, do you know that two from Jews and Tinek were killed walking home from shul? Tree fell on them. Six people were killed in the New York area from trees falling on them. They don't recall tragedies like this in recent history. Flooding, trees, electricity down. Wow, maybe, I don't know, I want to play Ribbono Shlom, but someone called me from America last night and says, God is speaking to us, gave me a whole... He was the rabbi of the Sephardic Shul,
president.
And Krauss, how did Krauss walk with him? He was davening there too? Or?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was at that shul that morning.
Wow.
Better should happen in Washington.
Well, better should happen in Washington to someone we know. You're absolutely right. But anyway, coming back here, so Rabbi Rachman based it upon Hafkat Kedushin retroactively in the Gemara. The second thing he based it upon is Mekach Ta'ut. Now, Mekach Ta'ut, of course, is a basic klal in halacha. When you buy something, you have to get what you're buying. If you're not getting what you're buying, it's a Mekach Ta'ut. So, how would this apply to marriage? And Reb Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Rachman quoted Rabbi Feinstein, Reb Moshe has two examples that I know of where he was mater or woman remarrying without a get, on the basis of Mekach Ta'ut. One example, and I happen to know the rabbi was involved in, he was Rabbi Drazen's older brother, was the Rav who asked the Shaila. Not Rabbi Nachum Drazen, but Rabbi Zev Drazen, but Rabbi Moshe writes the tshuva, he writes Rabbi Nachum Drazen, it should be Rabbi Zev. He wrote, it was a plate at the Hakum, as we say in Rabbinic Hebrew, because he knew Nathan better than Zev, but the tshuva was to William, to Zev. So, what was the Shaila? That she married a man who had mental problems. At the time of marriage, she did not know. And the man had been institutionalized before the marriage. And now, the man refuses to give a get. He's torturing the woman. He wants money, etc. And Reb Moshe Paskins, she doesn't need a get, because this is Mekach Ta'ut. She did not know the man was insane before the marriage. Okay, that's one example.
What's the source?
It's in Reb Moshe. You want the source? Go to, you have Rakefet Aaron, go to Rakefet's overlook on Reb Moshe's Tshuvas. It's right there in Ebenezer. You'll find the sources. It's in the first volume of Ebenezer.
Also, they put out an index.
Yeah, you have an index, a wonderful index today. But you have it right in my survey of Reb Moshe, the first five volumes. It's in Rakefet Aaron Chelik Bet, I believe. I believe it's Chelik Bet. It may be Chelik Aleph. I think in Chelik Bet it's more the tradition articles. Okay. So, that's one source. Another source is even a more shocking source. A woman marries a man, and I will assume in our circles we're frum people. So there's no way the woman could have known this before the marriage. The man is impotent. And but you know, I've had this lahalacha with, don't tell me, I can't win with these guys. They took away my bottle of water. Oh my gosh, they cleaned the room. No, stay down, man. No, stay here and listen. It's more important, You have a bottle where? No, someone went. God, I can't win. I told the people in charge of the cleaning crew, don't touch anything on the desk, but it doesn't help. These guys have a fixation to clean everything in their way. So the man is impotent. Could you imagine? Now, I've had this in life, Shayla. We had, I can tell you an interesting story, that in Michlala in the 70s, this girl gets married. The husband was a paratrooper. You know what a paratrooper means? He has to have a profile of 97. A perfect profile. And tall, good-looking. And the husband was impotent. And I want to pay credit to Rabbi Cooperman. He paid for that man to have psychological help, and within a half year, they were able to clean up the impotency. Could you imagine? It was psychological. So Rav Moshe has this problem, the girl marries, and the man is impotent. And they cannot, Labriyut, straighten out the problem. He goes for help, but they can't help him. Nope, the woman wants a get. The woman wants a get. Wasn't this the story in Borough Park, the terrible tragedy of that young man who committed suicide 2 days after his wedding? Isn't the story that he told the woman he was incapable of having sexual relations because when he was in high school, etc., etc., and it made him impotent. It's psychological. It's not physical, but a psychological illness can be just as real as a physical illness. And he jumped because she said to him, I know, not for that. He was sentenced for other charges. And you know who the rabbi is? Forget about the name. His nephew was a Talmud Mufak of mine who studied with me many, many, many years in BMT, in the Kolel, Nachamal, Tzaitamal, Adritamal, a terrific, a medical doctor, Libo, Chashka B'Torah. I have a plaque that his nephew made up for me had it done individually to my Rebbe, whose words of Torah is sweet as honey. I have the plaque in there. That's his nephew. That's the connection. The Nickelberger's brother, the Rebbe's brother, and the sister is the mother of my Talmud, and his sister was my Talmidah.
So that's why
we'll spell it out for Yitzchak afterwards. His mind, thank you. Here, just give me a drop in here. His mind, why did the boy commit suicide? Because the girl said to him, why did you marry me if you're impotent? Why didn't you tell me? And he had no answer. She went back to sleep, and he jumped at 6:30 a.m. Come, you imagine you're telling the bride you're impotent. God's a lapidin. The man is a murderer. I said that in my anger when I spoke at the why there's so much terror. That's before the Alon scandal. We don't know. We don't know what Alon actually did. You understand? Rabbi Lichtenstein knows. You will not get it out of him. I mean, I give credit to Takana that there wasn't the leak, and they knew for so many years. But God have mercy. What
was the murderer you're referring to here?
This man who just got sentenced to, not sentenced, he was found guilty. But the judge, a black woman judge, apologized for locking him up before Pesach. Such menschlichkeit in her part. So he molested this boy in high school. No, if your Rebbe molests you, remember what I said? Your Rebbe's the biggest figure in your life. The Rebbe's teaching you Torah. The Rebbe who's teaching you Shas and Paiskim by day is molesting you by night.
And that was the boy that jumped off?
That's what they say, that the boy who jumped off was molested by him when he was a high school kid. But he wasn't sentenced on that, he was sentenced on other things. Well, other children he molested. Oh, God's so lapidin. It's sickening. That's not a maneuver. That's a toy list. To call him a maneuver is giving him credit. The guy from Muncie, all right, he's Nebuch. He met a beautiful woman, evidently, and got carried away. Nope, a maneuver is there, but at least what he did was not toy va. Right or wrong? You married your wife? You think she's a beauty? I think my wife is a beauty. What can I tell you? Been a bus of a dumb. Yeah, Rav Goldrich used to say, yeah, he had a good sense of humor and a good insight. He used to say, when you go out with a girl, you're not looking for a chavrusa, you're looking for a chavera. You understand? That was Rav Goldrich's part, the Rosh Hashiva of Karen Biafna. So, all right, he was looking at why he needed a chavera beyond his wife, das weiß ich nicht. But, okay. But, toeva? Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Rachman extended this concept. And a woman has a right to say she didn't know. Now, how far do you extend it? This becomes very, very involved. Rav Moshe limited it to mental illness and inability, impotency. Rav Moshe writes about impotency, Ein lecha machla yoter gedola mizu. That when it comes to marriage, there's no Ein lecha mum yoter gedola mizu. But Rav Moshe writes when it comes to marriage, by definition, impotency is the worst possible illness that there can be. Okay, blemish that there can be. Rabbi Rachman already took a little bit further. So, yeah, Donnie, I'll give you a simple example. A guy is married. My wife says she married me because she thought I was a smart person and I'd make a lot of money. No, you tell me, have I made a lot of money? Room for annulment of marriage? I married Mekach Taot, all right? And you can go on and on with these examples, and this is what's come up in the basin. I married this man. Oh, you can make it. You can make wonderful cases. I thought he was very sensitive to other human beings. I've been married to him for 30 years, and he's an insensitive boor. Yeah, he refuses to give a get. Retroactive annulment of marriage. Mekach Taot. Okay, this is what Rabbi Rachman based his thinking upon. There is no question that Rabbi Rachman was pained. Rabbi Rachman was reacting to the Chilul Hashem caused by endless men who kept their wives in captive until they had large sums of money. And unfortunately, I can tell you, Matan, I was involved in cases like this too. If you want to know what your Rebbe was capable of in his youth, you should know that I'll take you around the bend and I'll show you the classroom where I had the police wait outside, and the minute we were ready, I dismissed the class. As they walked out, I pointed to the maneuver, and they arrested him right around the bend on this floor in BMT. But as I predicted, Aaron Kepit is not a fool. I said it won't help. He'll go to jail and become the rabbi of all the Sfadim who give bracha, they'll look up to him. He's mystical. That's what happened. They kept him in jail for about 3 months. In all the newspapers, headlines, this guy had big yichus. I don't want to mention his name, not to embarrass the family. You all know the family. Never gave a get. Finally in America, when the family published full-page advertisements apologizing to him in Jewish press, I think in Jewish news, whatever the... then he finally gave a get years later. What he did to that girl, Halabaya could have known marriage. But the problem is on two levels, halachically. Number one, yes, there is a concept of mekach ta'ut, but it's limited. Mental illness and impotency is what all the achronim agree to. No one in their right mind goes beyond that, because beyond that, ain't l'davar sof, there's no marriage whatsoever. Matan is married for 30 years, his wife doesn't like the way he dresses. He's not a gentleman, he doesn't wear a tie. I thought he was marrying a man who wears a tie and a jacket and walks around in dignity, instead he's a slob, he's a chalutz. I never wanted to marry a chalutz. Sonia Peres threw her husband out. I mean, it's very sad, it's a novel. Anyone one day can write a novel, he'll have a bestseller. On here, a man achieves his dream to become president, his wife throws him out. And you know what his wife said? I married a raftan, not a president. No, you read the papers? You'd say you don't read the papers. Hitchatanti im raftan. Lo im nasi medina. Then she laughs, she doesn't want a president, she wants her old age, be together in a nice old age home, and then enjoy life, etc.
She doesn't come to the president's house?
She doesn't, Yitzchak, when is the last time you saw Sonia Peres? You better put glasses on, my boy, you're not seeing well. Now, so you see, you can't make it. Anything under the sun. Michael walks home today, his wife jumps on him, face. He didn't comb his hair properly. Now, what hair do we have left to comb? My wife said to me, if you ever become bald, I'm divorcing you. You know, it's 20 years since I became bald, what can she do? But you can't say Mekach Tod. Havkod Kedushin is much deeper. A guy named Aaron Rakefet wrote an article for YU publication years ago, in a new edition of Rakefet Aaron, I'll put it in. It didn't exist at the time I collected everything in 1997.
Who's
going to
make the second edition?
If God spares me, it's my next goal. After
the next goal has to be the republishing Silver.
That's happening. Silver Revel, there, we had a long chat with New York. The only question is whether to republish it together with the new book or to wait a few months and then come out with it. I'm giving the rights to the OU. They're going to republish it. In other words, I want to be sure they make money. They shouldn't lose money on me. So the new book, they have to put money
into
it.
They need money on the tapes.
They
put those out in cassettes form or just in tapes?
CDs? No, it's all in cassettes. It's all old-fashioned, what they did years ago.
They have to redo it.
They have to say that I'm here, they're there. They have a lot on their mind. Let's see the new book come out in dignity. I have to work on a bibliography now. One more thing left to do, which by the end of Pesach, I hope I'll have everything, I'll have it finished. But anyway, coming back here, with Havkod Kedushin, if you notice the two Gemaras that really are retroactive, annulment of marriage, the one in Ketuvah, Daf Gimel, I believe it is, and the one in Gittin, Daf Lamed Bet Lamed Gimel, in both, it's a sugya, Lamed Bet Lamed Gimel. Iktuvah, I believe it's Daf Gimel, if I'm not mistaken, Daf Gimel Amid Aleph. Anyone can correct me if they wish, because I don't have the Gemara open in front of me. Am I right? About Hareze Gittach Amenat Sheim, Ani Lo Yavol Ad Shloshim Yom, and Pasak Mavra, that whole sugya, is it It's Gimel. Gimel Lamed Aleph? Somewhere over there. Okay, I'm not too far off then, he says. See, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein wouldn't have to ask students. Correct me if I'm wrong. He knows it. Like that. Baruch Hashem. Now, in all those cases, there was a get. The problem was that the get had a halachic problem. The Rabbanim were machshir the get. Excuse me? Gimel, I was right. Gimel Amin Aleph. Baruch Shekivanti. The Rabbanim were machshir the get through the instrument of Hapkad Kedushin. But without the get, you can't be machshir through Hapkad Kedushin. You need to get there. That's the way 90% of the Rishonim learned the Sugya. And that's why Rabbi Rachman's idea cannot work wholesale. It can work in limited cases if you can show the man was insane, had a terrible temper, was institutionalized, there was a police report against him, you didn't know any of this. Then you can say Mekach Tot. But it's not, doesn't earn enough of a living. He doesn't like the honeymooners. I love the honeymooners. He won't let me watch it on television. He insists on watching Seinfeld. That's not enough. You can't declare Mekach Tot. Yeah. That's the worst part. The children would be mamzerim. So there was a case we had, when I say we, my daughter, and she told me about it, and Rabbi Lichtenstein was mom. I think I mentioned in class a few years ago, this girl was married to this man from West Hempstead. And he was a character. And she took ill, and terrible, they split up, and suddenly her high school boyfriend showed up, who was divorced. And she fell head over heels in love with him again, and he took her for chemotherapy, and he was very kind to her, and she desperately wanted to get, and the first husband said, absolutely not over my dead body, etc., etc. No, they went to America, went to Rabbi Rachman's Beis Din, went to Philadelphia, a conservative Sephardic rabbi married them. So my daughter saw how upset I was. She said to me, Abba, at least they can't have children at their age. There'll be no mamzerim. So that's to answer your question. Now, Rabbi Rachman went well, but to quote Rabbi Rubin a few minutes ago, his schema in Kol Yisrael, to quote the Rav and his understanding of the Rambam, Hatam al Mishnah Torah, which a guy named Rakefet has elaborated upon in tens of hours of Shayurim over the generations, no one of a responsible position in the Torah world has accepted Rabbi Rachman's solution. And that is not a solution. It meant well, but you can't do hocus pocus with a divine system. And preliminary concepts that later will lead to retroactive annulment of marriage is very limited in applicability. And Mekach Ta'ut, where Rav Moshe Feinstein is matir, there I would say it has been accepted, but not beyond it. So what can we do? What can we do? How can we solve this problem? And as I mentioned, you occasionally have where the woman is the one, not the man. What can we do? I'll come to that in a second. There is one basic rule that all of you have to insist upon in the rabbinate. A pre-nuptial agreement. We should issue a cheirim today that no rabbi should be Masada Kedushin where the woman and the man do not have a pre-nuptial agreement. What is the pre-nuptial agreement? Accomplished. First of all, do you have the fellas who are Donnie, do you have?
Personally, I don't. There was no.
David, do you have? No. Interesting. Do you have, Michael?
Yep.
You have.
Well, interesting. Because we were against it.
No, I understand. I understand. Believe me, in my times, no one heard of it. We certainly didn't have. Well, what is the prenuptial agreement accomplished? Now, I have to be honest with you. None of us know whether this will actually stand up in secular court. It has yet to be challenged on the level of the Supreme Court.
What about Israel?
I'll come to Israel in a second. Israel is very different. Yeah. A prenuptial agreement, what does it accomplish? It forces the man to realize that at a certain point, if the Beis Din rules he has to give a get and he refuses, he's obligated to pay his wife a weekly sum of support that is legally enforceable in a secular court. And what that effectively does, the man is obligated $1,000 a week. They link it to the cost of living. Of course, you can agree in a prenuptial agreement to a sum in 2010 that will be laughable in 2030. You follow me? Today, $1,000 a week is a hell of a lot of money. In 2030, you don't know what it would be, so you have to link it. And that creates pressure. There's a lot in the prenuptial of the beautiful words that Yitzchak says, no one will listen to, no one will laugh, but there are beautiful words there that if something happens and the marriage cannot be held together and it's the rabbis agree, you have to be menschlich, you have to be decent, you have to divorce in dignity, you have to echo Rabbi Avram Pam's message. Everything is fine and beautiful. But that, no, doesn't have a real impact. The monetary aspect can have a very important impact. So this is sine qua non requirement, prenuptial. It helps later. It minimizes the aggravation. Even if the man wants to be evil, it puts brakes on how evil he can be. The state of Israel has two advantages. One, on the books already there are laws that go back to the Gemara. Kofen oto ad shetoma rotzani. It's an open Mishnah in Gittin. It's an open Rambam. You can find it in Hilchik Erushin. So much has been written on the topic. Essentially, we don't allow Gentiles to beat the hell out of a man to give a get. We do allow Jews because we say it's not that they're beating him up. It's not that he's giving the get against his will. By knocking him around a little, you're getting to his core existence. This is the Rambam I'm quoting. And in his core existence, every Jew wants to be a good Jew. And there's a lot of truth to this. A lot of truth. So why don't we talk about beating a person up? In America you have a goon squad, Satma. They will beat a person up if the Beit Din tells them. The New York police will not intervene. They know why it's being done. They get away with it. In Israel, you're not going to have a goon squad, you're not going to beat a person up, but by law of the land, if a man is ordered to give a get and doesn't give a get, he loses all his privileges, meaning he cannot get a driver's license, it cannot be renewed. If he's a lawyer, a doctor, any profession that needs a license, it will not be renewed. He cannot write checks, he cannot have a bank account, he cannot have a visa, he cannot have a passport. All this is law of the land. Now, most normal people will give a get rather than suffer these strictures. A case came up where a woman refused to take a get. And her lawyer, or should I say his lawyer, it may have been my daughter who was the lawyer, I don't recall all the details, but anyway, my daughter argued, or whoever her lawyer was, his lawyer was argued, that just as the strictures apply to a man, they should likewise apply to a woman. The problem was that the law was written singularing out a man. The Knesset changed the law to read man or woman. And the strictures were applied to the woman. She took the get. There were two other cases. Again, my daughter testified in both these cases. in the Knesset. No, this is very nice. When you're sitting here and you're a free man and you want to be able to travel and you want a passport and you want to be able to practice your medicine, fine. What about if you're in jail? You couldn't care less. You're not going anywhere. You're facing 15 years in jail for armed robbery. No, the guy says, let my wife drop dead, let her rot. I don't give a hoot about her. So this new, tell me what happened. It's 2 years ago. The Knesset passed the law 2-3 years ago that the rabbinical court has the right to put a man into solitary confinement for not giving a get. It's the first time in history in Israel that outside of the jailers and the penal system, rabbis can put a man into solitary confinement and keep him there and let him rot. In both cases, the men gave gittin, one within 24 hours and one within 48 hours. They had to change the pot. So in Israel, you have the teeth of the law, which are much more powerful. And obviously, these are things that you cannot do in Chutz La'aretz, where you have a civil government which is not governed by ecclesiastical law. The other advantage to Israel is that the prenuptial agreement is enforceable in the courts of law because the prenuptial agreement was drawn up and okayed, seconded by the Batei Dinim and the Batei Mishpat. Now, what's the problem here with the prenuptial halachically? What's the problem is very simple. Asmachta lo kanya. You all learned the sugya in Masechet Sanhedrin. Masachet Bekuvya. Now, I want to ask a simple question. Why should a Masachet Bekuvya be not be allowed to give testimony? Why isn't he believed? So he's saying the Sachek Bekuvya is a bit of a robber. Why is he a robber? Because when I sit down to play a game of cards, I don't think I'm going to lose. I'm confident I'm going to win. When I lose, I really, it's against my will. I don't want to give this money away. I didn't think I would lose. I'm not giving it away with my full heart. The guy taking it may be a thief. Asmachta lo kanya. Ein kan smichat hadat. With the prenuptial, what is the problem? That if a guy says, yeah, I'll give $1,000 a week, I'll do this, I'll do that. He doesn't mean it. He doesn't believe this will ever happen. It's asmachta. This is why there is some resentment to the prenuptial. I understand Rav Yashiv has not given it his full endorsement. On the other hand, Nehemiah Zalman Goldberg, who's one of the great poskim of Yerushalayim, the son-in-law of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav Zalman Nehemiah Goldberg gave it his approval. The prenuptial was drawn up on the basis of his improvements upon the prenuptial that Rabbi Willig drew up for the Rabbinical Council of America. And when it comes to the whole question of Asmachta lo kanya, his feeling is that since you explained it, and since he knows what's happening, and since he understands, there is gemirat dat, there is smichat dat, and when he makes the kinyan, the chatan, when you arrange the prenuptial, he knows what he is doing. This is why you notice that marriages in Israel, there is a rav, many times there's a lawyer there. Because the lawyer, or the Tohen Rabbani, or the Tohenet Rabbani, is arranging the prenuptial and explaining it and seeing that there's a kinyan and seeing that it is done properly. So that in 10 years' time, he cannot claim, I didn't know what I was doing, I was in a fog, it wasn't explained to me. It's very important to explain and have it done. So in Israel, you have two levels that function much better than America by virtue of our being a Jewish state. Let me just say one more thing that I must say. I have to add one more thought. I want to pay a compliment to the Batei Dinim in Israel. You know, everyone criticizes. And there is what to criticize. I'm not a fool. My daughter has said to me many times, Abba, if you would see the way some of these Dayanim conduct themselves, you would run away with your hands up, you know, throwing, it's the end. I want to pay a compliment. The Rabbinate in Israel, the Batei Dinim, have a division of detectives who they budget in hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and even more, who will go all over the world to find husbands who have disappeared. They follow up on every lead. They have Russian gangsters who have become Balei Tshuva, who have gone into Russia and got hold of the husbands who couldn't care less and beat the hell out of them. They gave a get. And the Mizrach HaDatot paid for it. We have French speakers. I can tell you one incident with my wife. I would tell you the story with the... she has this woman, a Haredit woman. I believe the case was sent to my daughter by the Eda Haredit that asked that she handle it through the Batei Dinim of the government. They couldn't handle it, whatever the reasons were. Perhaps you'll understand when I tell the story. So this was a Haredit woman who had a husband, you know, quite successful. Businessman, import, export, only one problem. He had a mistress in wherever he was working. He had mistresses. He was a bit of a maneuver. Not a toy vist, but a maneuver. So my daughter has a tzav to arrest him the minute he comes into the country again. He's in France. Lo and behold, about 10 o'clock at night, she gets a call from the woman. Her husband is in a hotel, a little hotel in Rehov Malachi, I believe it was, in Geula, and he's shacked up there with the mistress. My daughter calls the police. Immediately a police car comes to our house, and my daughter tells me she jumps into the police car, and the guy driving it looks at the guy next to him, well, you know, why he doesn't say, Mazeh, and the other police says, Klahayiti beseret hazeh. I was already... I know what I'm doing. She knows what she's doing. You just drive. They drive to the little hotel. They come in and literally they get the guy. I don't want to tell you where his pants were. And they handcuff him and lead him away. And my daughter said he was a suave businessman with a trim beard. And the next morning he gives a get. But I have to say, he was a gentleman. He said to my daughter, Kol HaKavot. You follow me? He admitted he was tracked down. They had him. But that's Israel. You can't do it in America. Now, let me end off.
Listen, but I have heard a case of people came in, the Moroccan rabbi said to the Constantine, were you forced to be here today?
Yeah, no, I say that.
And we're going to take that rabbi and whip him.
He has to say Meretzoni. It's part of the Nusach. So if he says he was forced, you say, fine, you're going to jail. You follow me? There's ways to do it. You have to know. I'll tell you whose Batei Dinim are the best in this. It's interesting. The Batei Dinim in Haifa, Rav Shai Yosef Cohen. They know how to handle. They're part of the modern world. Second best are the Batei Dinim in Yerushalayim. You wouldn't believe where the worst Batei Dinim in Israel are as far as any modernity. The Batei Dinim of Tel Aviv. They are third in the... You need a whole new cadre of Dayanim who are raised and know the modern world. And how many years did it take to raise an American rabbinate that was capable of speaking to the people? It took 150 years. So take 100 years here. We're there. We're halfway there already. More than halfway. The Rakevet solution goes behind anything I've said in class. And this is very important for you. What we have to do is educate. And we have to start educating when a kid is in seventh grade. Unfortunately, sex is on every street corner today. We were older when we found out about sex. We were eighth graders, ninth graders. Today, every kid already by 7th grade knows about sex. It's all over the news, all over the newspapers. I can tell you with our terrible tragedy with Alone, There's only one interesting comment to be made. No one in the Haredi world knows what's going on. It has not been mentioned even one line in the Haredi press. They can't talk about, imagine a Rebbe, a manuvel, etc. Not a manuvel, to a list. They can't mention it. We have to educate. Kids are educable. And you have to tell a kid, number one, and this is crucially important, marriage is not an option. Marriage is an obligation. There's a big difference between an option and an obligation. And we have to tell a kid already in seventh grade that you have to be educated, you have to grow up, you have to marry. Not every good, there's no such thing as a woman who is perfect, just like none of you wild kids are perfect. But we try to become good people and upright people. And we have to marry and we have to be decent to our wives. And by eighth grade already, you have to add to the curriculum. At times, it may not work out. There may be a need for a divorce. A divorce has to be menschlich. And you have to quote the Bavram Pam. And a Jew remains a Jew. And the way you live is either a Kiddush Hashem or a Chilul Hashem. And this has to be hit away. We cannot pull punches. We cannot hide in the sand. There's a tremendous drive on today for sex education in high school. All of you know there isn't a modern Orthodox day school where there isn't sex education in high school. Today, there are many so-called right-wing schools, particularly outside the state of Israel. The state of Israel still lives, as I said, there hasn't been one word about the Alon scandal in the Haredi press. That's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because, thank God, no one's besmirching us. It's a curse because kids have to know what to watch for. If a Rebbe can act like this, you have to accept the Rebbe. Be'e ravon mugbal, to use a modern Hebrew idiom. We have to educate. And we have to talk. We have to talk until we're blue in the face. But I have a feeling that education rubs off. It leaves an impact. Kiddush Hashem, Chilul Hashem, upright lifestyle, decency, minimize heartache, machloket. It didn't work out. Don't kill each other. Don't ruin your reputation. Don't ruin your subsequent life. Education. I am the greatest believer in education. In the introduction to my new book, I have a line. I thank Yeshiva University for my education and for giving me the ability to educate others. I should have written the ability to attempt to educate others, but I don't want to embarrass my students, so I wrote to educate others. My dear students, we have finished the final shayur before the great holiday of Pesach. What did we do today? More sources on thinking twice, obligation to children, the actual divorce, menschlichkeit, and then the heart of the shayur, a fair analysis. Donnie, I think I was fair. Am I right or wrong with Rabbi Ratman? I didn't maledict, I didn't curse, but I didn't say it's okay either. I want to understand the man, Zichrono Livracha. He was a great man, no two ways about it. What's interesting is all his kids are from grandchildren, Baruch Hashem. All his kids. So you got to give credit. He raised them, you know, not in today's climate. It was 50, 60 years ago. But we have to take a different approach. The state of Israel, thank God, because it's a Jewish state, we're in a better position. With the Chutz Laretz, the difficulties remain. They have been ameliorated to a certain degree, but not eradicated. Here, Baruch Hashem, there's a bit of eradication. We've come a lot further, thank God. Right after Pesach, I pick up again with an unbelievable topic, Kibud Avim, dealing with parents, understanding parents, very, very important as individuals and also as machanchim, as rabbanim. Let me regale you with a story out of Pesach, which says a lot. You all know the editor of my photographs and my work on the rug, which I am humbled to say that it's been called classic by important people. So in that editorial, in the work, the photography editor is Roy Albert, Zichrono Levracha. Rabbi Albert was a mismach of the yeshiva, the late 40s, early 50s, was in the rabbinate all the years, was a wonderful individual, tremendous sense of humor. So one time, he's coming back from a funeral, this is in the 80s, coming back from a funeral in Brooklyn, he's on his way to Queens, he officiated, and he stops off at the Pesach store in Borough Park to get his wife, Gabe Melisma, to get it right before Pesach. So in the Pesach story, he sees this woman, a Gadish Afray, Hungarian woman, and she's talking, you know, to the guy who owns the store, and she's telling him, give me you guys don't know Yiddish, give me only a Heimische Hechsher, you know, a Rebbeisha Hechsher, ich will nicht, I don't want the OU, I don't want the OU. And Rabbi Albert is boiling mad, she's putting down the OU. And finally, when it comes to the salt, she looks at the salt with the Rebbeisha Hechsher, it's half black. She says, oh, thus can we get this salt, give me with the OU. You know, it's clean, it's nice, it's a big firm. And he's boiling mad, so he turns to the woman, and with a straight face, he says, my tired of frying. My dear woman, I see you're very pedantic in your observance. Tell me, how will you get this home? She says, what do you mean, how will I get it home? My husband is sitting out there in the Cadillac waiting. So he says to her, who cleaned the car? She says to him, what do you mean? He had it cleaned by the Schwarzer in the gas station. He gave her chmeis a few cents, and she cleaned the car. He cleaned the car. So he says, that's cleaning? A guy cleans, and that's genug for Pesach? In the summer, on a guy? He says, come here with me, my tired of my car with me. And he shows her, he had just gotten, he rented a car. He was crippled, Lo Aleinu. He needed a special car for his feet. I think the clutch and the gas pedal and brake, what he worked by hand, not by foot. So he had just gotten the new rental. He says, mein tired of so. He says, every Erev Pesach, I get a new car. And he shows that a stick is on the window. It's brand new. Thus haste, as this is what you can consider a car ready for Pesach. But a Schwarzer used the vacuum cleaner in a gas station? That doesn't get it ready. And with that, he walks out and walks on. Comes back a week later. The owner of the store, a few days later, had another funeral. The owner of the store says, oh, Rabbi Albert, what you did to that woman. What you said, what do you mean? All I did was tell her, the car was in Pesach, they could not throw women of her chumras. You don't know what happened. She went to the car. She told me, keep the order here. Beat the hell out of her husband. Yelled at him. They went home. Covered the whole car with newspaper. Came back, the trunk, the seats, all covered with newspaper, and on top of the newspaper they put the Pesach Degorah. And that's what Rabbi Albert had accomplished. Gentlemen, I have many clippings here. You're welcome to take what you want, and we meet again in health and happiness. Thank you so much for coming. Das Vedanya. Chag Kasher V'Sameach V'Chodesh Tov U'Mevorach.
Which would parallel be, because Amir Abraham is saying that, yeah, we don't have to do it for you. We have to put in Milsa, and everyone's going to know about it. You don't have to be Mamish in front of the Mashik at all. That's one way to approach the first day of the Gemara, and in terms of what Machlokes that parallels. which is George was on Mount Testament Day. Looking at the two days together through the view of the Rashbam says that so, find the first day of which depends on how the Machlokes is in the Mishnah, would show that.